to The Truth in His Art. I am your host, Rob Lee. Thank you for tuning in to these conversations at the intersection of arts, culture, and community. Today we have a special guest, big names only. Today, I am super excited to introduce my next guest. She is a dynamic visual artist from Los Angeles, LA, the City of Angels. She's renowned for her captivating work in paint and mixed media, where she delves into narrative, spirituality, and hidden histories, creating a unique blend of figurative art with surreal elements. Please welcome the great Lanice Howard. Welcome to the podcast.
Hello.
I was going to say Lala, but I was like, nah, we got to go with the Gov.
Yeah. But don't talk me Lala, so that's cool too.
Okay. I'm here for it. So, yeah, thank you for making the time, and thank you for inviting us in for this conversation. And, you know, before we dive like super deep, I want to kick things off with a little bit of an intro. Like, I'll get the artist statement, I'll get the online bio, and often there's something missing. Like, you'll find out like, yeah, you know, not only do I paint, but I'm also a boxer. And that's the most important part of what I do. So if you will, could you take a moment and give us like your bio in your own words?
Yes. Well, my name is Lanice Howard. I'm a visual artist here based in Los Angeles. I was actually born in California. And I moved to New York, or we moved to New York when I was 5. And then I lived there until I was 17. And I came back here. California was calling me. I knew once I graduated, I was going to end up on the West Coast. And I came to LA. I used to model at that time. So I did that for a few years. I did several other jobs. And I ended up going to school for fashion. I guess because I have this history or this background in modeling, and I've always loved doing fashion sketches and drawing bodies. And I thought it was kind of a no-brainer to get into fashion. So I started in fashion, and then I ended up taking art as an elective. I've always been interested in art since a child, but I guess I really didn't think that it was something that was plausible. And yeah, I had a teacher who really pushed me into it, and I guess the rest is history. That was in 2017. I started going serious with the art, and I guess I've been showing my work now for the past like 4 or 5 years. And yeah, it's been a journey, and I feel like now, you know, my work is changing, and there's some things that I'm planning to get into soon, like stepping back into fashion actually, and in conjunction with my art. I also love to sing. I love to write. I write poetry. I do a lot of writing that also informs my work. And I'm planning on getting into some sculpture soon. So yeah, just, I've been telling myself 2024 is the year of no limits for me. I feel like I'm a multifaceted, you know, I'm multiplicited, and I want to kind of express that more in my work and in my creativity this year.
That's great. And, you know, being able to, as we go through, I think we have the creative thing that we do, right? And then, you know, whether it's our art, whether it's how we approach things, we have the thing that we do, but, you know, we don't want to be stagnant. We want to figure out like, no, I'm more than just that. You know, I do this podcast thing, but also, you know, I might paint here and there, which was the thing that I was doing.
Oh, nice.
I had this goal. I've been podcasting for about 15 years, and I had this goal probably about 6 years ago because I wanted to revisit painting, you know, and I kind of gave it up as one of those things that this ain't for me. And I got in trouble with my parents. I've worn glasses since I was 3, and I did a mural and I got my glasses covered in paint. And, you know, Black parents, they're like, yo, like, what are you doing? What is this art? What is this paint? We got to figure this out. But being able to kind of revisit ultimately is what I'm getting at. So hearing that what's on the horizon is not only expanding sort of the fine art stuff, like adding like sculpture and kind of blowing out like what you're doing visually, but also revisiting fashion and some of those roots for you. That's really cool.
Yeah, I usually give myself, I guess, a prompt in the process of me creating, and I try to find the medium that best enables me to express a specific thing. And if I feel like it can be best expressed through a painting, then I'll use a painting. But there's times where I'm like, you know what, this idea needs to be expressed through a different medium. It needs to be expressed through sculpture. It needs to be expressed through a visual. It needs to be expressed through writing. And that's usually the metric that I use to inform how I go about creating. And so it got to a point where I was like, oh, this story needs, I need to go into sculpture. I need to go into this to also to expand the universe that I feel like I'm creating and crafting. So yeah, it's exciting.
Expanding toolkit. I love to hear it. So if you think back, you know, having, you know, LA, having New York as part of like your bio, those are vastly different coasts. They both have, they're big on culture, big on respective art scenes. There are different styles that are associated with both of those coasts. So thinking back, like, is there something between, you know, being on either coast that, you know, was like, yeah, this is definitely a touch point. This is definitely an inflection point of creativity for you. Like, was there, I remember back when I was in New York, I saw this movie and it had this visual in there and I was like, I need to paint that. Or, you know, or being, you know, in LA and it's like, man, this sunset or this sunrise, sun looks really cool. I need to get this captured. Is there something that comes to mind for you?
Yeah, well, for New York, I would say it definitely was just the access to museums and, you know, libraries and, you know, public institutions. I was really a nerd when I was younger, and I lived at the library. I lived at the museum. I used to go all the time and just go to different parts of the museum and be there until it closed, basically. I was really inspired by like the Renaissance, obviously, and I've always loved like Egyptian, Kemetic, Nubian culture. And I would visit the museums and like look in their whole sections of like Egypt and the Near East or Africa and just immerse myself into those sculptures and those artifacts. So yeah, I definitely think for New York, it was more so that. And for LA, it's definitely been the environment. It's been the environment, the different colors, you know, the sunsets, all the different, you know, trees and landscapes. And I feel like LA is just such a diverse city where, you know, New York is a little bit more monotone in a way where it's like New York is New York. And LA is, you know, there's parts of LA that remind you of New York in this weird kind of parallel universe way. And then you have parts of LA that make you think you're in Mexico. And then there's parts of LA that feel like Hawaii. And you know, you have other parts that just feel quintessentially California. And I think just seeing that on a daily basis and, you know, all those different, I guess, interactions create this kind of melting pot of ideas for me. And I definitely think it's influenced like the color palette in my work. For sure. My old studio was downtown and I had these big, huge windows and every day was just these beautiful sunsets. And I would literally like take pictures of the sunset like every day. And those pictures, those images, those references they informed a lot of this background. And yeah, still to this day, I'm always looking at the sky and I love landscape.
That's great. And we're going to definitely dive a bit more there. So you did mention a moment ago, sort of inspirations and influences, what have you. So I definitely want to dive a bit further into that. But I want to add this sort of like twist to it. I think a lot of times we get inspiration from like unexpected places.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I could say like, yo, and even in doing this podcast, I didn't expect that I was going to get annoyed by someone talking ill of Baltimore and it's turned into me talking with someone that's in Cali who's a really dope artist. I didn't think that was going to be the thing. And the inspiration is coming from this notion of people not having the opportunity to share their story in their authentic way and communities being deemed in a certain way. That's the beginning of that nugget. Super unexpected. I got pissed and I was like, I should interview people. That's the way to do it. So in thinking of something that might be sort of unexpected, like you had a a response to something as it relates to, you know, creative work, because you're blossoming in a sort of multiple directions at this point in your creative journey. But thinking about something that was maybe unexpected, like, damn, I didn't think I was going to be influenced and inspired by that. What comes to mind for you that has been a part of the journey?
Well, I guess recently I can talk about the recent inspiration, because that kind of, I guess, came out of, well, seems like it came out of nowhere. So recently I've been really inspired by the 70s, like the 60s and the 70s. And I think I've always kind of been an old soul. Well, I call myself like an old soul and a young spirit at the same time.
Okay.
I have like this duality that exists. And when I was really, really young, I loved to sing. So, and I still love to sing. And so I would always listen to like these old singers from like the 60s and 70s. And my brothers would be like, why are you playing these, like this old music? And so that's always been there. But I think recently with all that's been going on, I think my mind has been wanting to like rest more in a time in which I've have this, I guess, like nostalgia for, even though I wasn't alive, but I think it's through like my mother. Recently, my mother's been going through a lot. So I think I'm holding on to like certain moments with her sharing like old music with me. And also I just think like that time was so pivotal for Black Americans. I think it was when we really first were granted like real freedom. And so there was like this explosion of culture. And I think that as time has gone, I've just gotten more and more like immersed into it and obsessed with it. And I'm just so inspired by the women of that time and the men of that time too, but definitely the women and just how graceful they were and how enigmatic they were. And, you know, they were just like no nonsense. They were like, they pushed themselves in these doors, in these spaces that no one like them had been in before. And they did it with just so much poise and tenacity. And so that's what's been really like inspiring me. And I'm kind of merging it with like stories of like, I guess my own like family history and my own dreams and things like that. So I think that that's something that I guess came out of nowhere, because before my work was more so dealing with like this parallel universe and this like kind of a slightly apocalyptic theme, which I'm still really inspired by. But recently it just kind of took up, I guess, a hard left. And I'm like, you know what, this is what I'm inspired by right now. And I have to like follow it, you know?
Yeah. And you key in on something really, really big. Like, you know, we're coming up on in what, this summer really will be the 60th anniversary of the Civil Rights Act. So, you know, it's like 1964, you know, and so definitely there's alignment. And, you know, when I go back and I definitely connect, you know, this sort of cusp Aquarius Capricorn thing, you know, gang, gang, but I definitely where you have those moments of like, I wasn't around for this. I shouldn't know about this. But then you're like, oh no, I do. And I'm really inspired by this. And I get a lot of juice from this and energy. And, you know, when I'm doing research for questions, what have you, and maybe this is bad, but I find like sometimes we do things in a certain way. You know, we might ask a question in a certain way or approach things in a certain way. And I'm like, nah, I need to go back 20, 30, 40 years to see how it was approached then to actually get inspiration there, because it's nothing feels like really new. Now, granted, that's super old, but it's still like something worth revisiting. Whereas now it's kind of watered down, I guess is what I'm getting at, as we get further away from source, if you will.
Yeah.
So if for the folks that are undipped and unfamiliar, like how would you, you know, talk about like your work and sort of like, what are the key characteristics, themes, traits? Because you mentioned sort of the otherworldliness. You mentioned like the sort of that hard left that's happening. So for the folks that are undipped, give them the rundown. Like, what could, you know, they be looking for when they're seeing like your art, experiencing your art? Like, you know, some folks may say, yes, absolutely about color. I see color in your work, by the way. I dig the color. I like the color. So, you know, tell the folks, like, really, what is your work about?
So I would say, firstly, that my work is storytelling usually. And I approach it in a layered way. I often think of the work as like a multilinear narrative. So I have like this overarching narrative that is really like the universe that my work lies in, which is the universe that I created and I'm still developing. And then there's like these stories that are weaving through that universe. And those stories often are related to our own stories in this world. So I often think of my work as like this world is like a parallel universe. And so it's intersecting from like my dreams, forgotten histories, and kind of the in-between moments. Yeah. So I often try to connect, I guess, capture like these in-between moments in the paintings, like before an action or, you know, in between like these, I guess, kind of in between these apexes in the story. So yeah, I feel like it's always evolving too. Right now there is that otherworldliness that always, I think, permeated in my work, because I think at heart I'm a surrealist. And I was really inspired by a lot of surrealist painters. So there is that surrealist quality, but it's not overtly there. It's more like nuanced in its approach, where you have to kind of, you feel it, you feel that energy, but you have to look into it and kind of question things. I want it to be not as surface level. So I want people to kind of look at the paintings and maybe they'll get a surface, you know, feeling from it, or they'll get the gist of it, but then I want them to look at it more and then start connecting the dots with like other paintings and then past work, and, you know, because it's all like, they're all kind of in this universe together. You know, but the universe is, our universe is huge. You know, you have galaxies, you have different galaxies, you have local groups, you have solar systems, you know, so it's like each story is kind of like a branch in that universe. And this one, even though it seemed like a hard left, there's parts of it that connect to the previous work. And I think that's something that I tell myself I want to take the training wheels off, because I kind of, in the past, it's like, oh, how does this connect to the last story? How does this connect? You know, I'm always thinking of that. And now I'm trying to approach it in a way where I'm not consciously thinking about it as much. I'm more so creating what I'm inspired by, and because I'm creating it and I created this other universe, it's just going to connect anyways. It all connects somehow.
And you got to trust in that, where in doing this, I started off this pod being in Baltimore, right? And when I started branching out and doing other communities, because I think, you know, it's about communication. It's not just one place, right? And I'm bringing this sensibility. And you know how it goes. We overthink everything. We live in our heads. And, and I remember getting some good feedback from someone who's like, you know, like a mentor in the radio space. And he said this key thing to me, which I think aligns with what you were describing. He was like, you know, if you're doing this, let's say I was going to Austin at the time, Austin, Texas. And he was like, you know, the people that get what you're doing and like what you're doing, they're going to understand and they're going to follow you. Because it's still part of the, and I'm going to use your words, the larger universe here. And that's sort of the thing. And for folks that, it's almost a Jay-Z thing, I guess. You know, you want old stuff, give old albums, whatever. And being able to broaden based off, you know, one's interest level and what they're interested in doing. This is where my work is naturally going. And you can see the threads that connect to earlier work and that will connect to future work.
Yeah, and you can't be scared. You can't live in fear, because I think the collectors are great and we appreciate them, and, you know, the appreciators of the work. I'm humbled to have people that care about my work. However, I think I'm telling the story, and I have to take my, you know, provenance in that, and I have to just tell myself, okay, I'm guiding this story, and I can't be too focused on like, oh, will people understand this? Because, you know, like my previous show that I just recently had was, it was really, really deep. And it didn't necessarily translate in as much sales as my previous show. And I feel like I had to get out though. I had to, you know, it was about the afterlife. There was a lot of, you know, it was about death and rebirth, and you had paintings with caskets in it, and, you know, things that I'm like, okay, maybe someone probably doesn't want to put like a big casket in the middle of their house or whatever, but I had to do what was I was inspired by. And I feel like in a way that was like the death of the old narrative. Mm. Now that I look back, it was like, and it was the other things dealing with like family stuff that was happening. And I was dealing with a lot of loss, you know, of course it was inspired by things that were happening. But I when things happen, I try to investigate and find like a bigger, more, I guess, I try to understand why it's happening. And I think that show helped me have some closure with the idea of death and life and rebirth. And then just also like giving death to things that we no longer, that no longer serve us within ourselves. And so it had like multiple layers to it, but sometimes, you know, everyone's not going to be living where you're living in your head and in your space. And that's okay. I tell myself sometimes, you know, people might have to catch up with that one, or, you know, it might not hit automatically. It may take a while to hit, or, you know, but you just have to do what is calling you. And so now I'm in a space where, because I had that show, because before that it was like every show was doing good, well, and then, you know, it was almost like when I had that show that didn't do as well, it helped me to like not care as much because I'm like, you know what? Like there's no telling what like people are going to resonate with. And so you just have to do what's truest to you and hope that, you know, people, you know, resonate with it and they're inspired by it. They enjoy it. They get something out of it, but you can't overthink it. And it's really, really hard, but I've been trying to isolate too. I think quieting the noise is important too, because I think online we just get caught up in so many other things. Yeah.
It hits the people that it's supposed to hit when it's supposed to hit them. Like, and I know we have this thing, like, you know, for some artists, it might be sales. It might be acclaim. It might be sort of press. For me, it's downloads. It's like, man, it's only got 5. Come on now. And, you know, but the thing with it, it's like, if you're doing it right, if you're doing it honestly, and you're doing it, making work that you feel and that, and I think we got to a little bit to this even before we started recording, even work that feels like sort of fearless, like I'm not being encumbered by, this is what people want. It's like, no, this is what I want.
Shake the table a little bit. Like I've been telling myself, I love the body. I love the body. I love painting the body. I love drawing the body. And, you know, nudity has been something that I've done in my work, but I've kind of walked back from a few times. And I tell myself, you know, you grown, paint somebody. It's fun. Like, you know, so that's where I'm at now. But I wanted it to do it in a way that was giving, that made sense. And so I am glad that I did wait, because I like to, everything has to kind of flow. And I can't just paint, do something because I can, because I, at this point, I know I can paint anything I want. But like, what am I saying? Mm-hmm. What am I saying more than just the aesthetics of it? And so I think I had to get to a point where, you know, me as a woman, I was being objectified from my body. I was being judged for the way that I would go to shows and they wouldn't even think I was an artist. They would ask me, was I a dancer, a model, or what was, you know, and then, you know, just different things. And all that happening again and again and again, it was like, damn, like, why do we have to go through this as women? And then I started thinking more about that and all my past experiences. And then, you know, the show that I'm doing now, I guess I can give you an exclusive. It's titled Muse, M.U.S.E. And then there's going to be, you know, a subtitle. I'm not going to do that yet, though. But So it's definitely about, in a way, it's kind of like a self, my own story in a way, but through lens of archetypes that I'm using, and these from the 70s, these divas, and because I think we all live through each other, but you know, it's about the body, it's about power and femininity, it's about being a diva, being a, you know, being like this woman that takes her power back. But it's not only about the diva, it's also about the ingenue, which is the one who doesn't, you know she has that power either. So yeah, like I'm like, you have to, like, I can't just say it's about this and then kind of halfway have a painting that's like showing that power. No, I have to have one that's like, bam, this is it, you know? So yeah.
You gotta hit him over the head with it.
I'm not ranting.
No. And here's the thing. I'll chime in with this, because you know, you mentioned the thing that definitely had my eyebrow raised. I don't know if you saw it, but it's sort of this thing where you go there and it's the assumption that certain parties make of, you know, the assumption that you're a dancer, you're a model, you're whatever, you're not the artist. That's wild to me. I have stopped almost going to any public thing because I've heard, I'm 6'4", right? I'm tall dude. And I've dropped some weights. I've had that as a thing too, but it's like, you don't look like a podcaster. I was like, I don't even know what that means. What does that even mean? And, or even they'll think I'm security. I've been told at an event where I was getting an award for my podcast that, can you scan our tickets? Cause obviously I worked the gate. I had a lanyard on that said winner. And, yeah. And it's weird how those things go. So it does give you context where you might be viewed by certain parties. And I say that to say, almost being unapologetically, almost unapologetic about what I do. And I'm even hearing how you're approaching Muse, you know, and when I do interviews, I say the thing of like underrepresented, you know, unrepresented. I mean, Black and brown people. I mean, women, I mean, people aren't getting that same sort of respect and adoration and opportunities to really talk about their work authentically. Uh-huh. That's what's
big. Another. I could go on a whole rant with that, but I'm keeping cute.
But you grown though.
Yeah. No, but recently, I think because, you know, I've been like showing my work for the past 3.5, almost 4 years, all around the world. And you know, I never wanted to be one of those women. So it's like, why are we not getting the same? But it's like, you start to see it and you're like, damn, like, you know, I think also being a young woman, people put you in a box. They're like, oh, you're not ready for this. You're not ready for that. You're, you know, or they judge you because you're still young and you still may want to take a selfie or you want to do something else outside of, you're not just living in your studio 24/7. Which I kind of do, but I also have tried to balance my life with other things. And yeah, you can't get jaded about it because, you know, like I tell myself everything is in divine timing, but you know, the world is not always on the side of the young Black woman. And you do feel that, but I like a challenge. And so I tell myself, you know, I just have to, I work harder. My work gets better anyway. I get better. So I like the force to keep shining the diamond, you know, more brilliant. So I accept it, but there's moments where I'm just like, okay, I see how the world is, you know, it's harder, you know? But I guess that wouldn't happen any other way because that's how I got here.
It gets to all us all. And thank you for sharing that. That is a real experience. I mean, you know, when I do these conversations, I want people to share where they're at, what they're thinking, what's baked into it versus, hey, tell me about your work. Oh, that's so interesting. You can see the person yawning as they're asking the question. I listen to so many interviews. I'm like, I don't know if I'm a good interviewer, but they're absolutely not a good interviewer. So I want to ask you about this. In thinking of, like, we have our own ways of bringing ideas to life. Like, you know, I'm teaching right now. I'm teaching a group of seniors podcasting, seniors in high school, and it's art school, and I'm going through the whole structure and planning of doing something and building out a podcast. People just think you put on a mic and then boom, you got a podcast. No, it's not that. And there's strategy, there's structure in it. And you know, as I was sharing with you before we got started, this is what I had in mind for, you know, this conversation and the release. So could you walk us through like a recent piece and like sort of what the genesis was, like from, hey, I got this initial idea, I think this might be cool, to, all right, I'm gonna finish this piece, this stroke right here, and we're good. You know, the thing with painters, they're never quite done. It's like, I can do a little bit more here, a few more details.
Yeah, because I feel like I like it to dry for a while, mm-hmm. and then I just go in and I'm like, okay, we're trying, you know, touch things up. But yeah, so this is the green door. I was having reoccurring dreams about green doors. Yeah. And they would be in like interior scenes. So it would be like houses, and then I would go in the house, and then the house would have multiple doors, and they would be green. Also, I would go in these doors and there would be no floor. The floor would be kind of like a sky. There was more to the dream, but it gets kind of deep and it's a little emotional, so I won't go into that too much. But some of them were about my mom, but I was having these recurring dreams, and I was trying to figure out what the dreams were about. And so I started doing some investigation on the symbology of a green door. And basically, was kind of mentioning about how the green door is often associated with you coming into like a new realization of yourself or like a new chapter. And so, yeah, so I had these sketches that I was, you know, building from my dream journal, these doors. And then I saw an image of Pam Grier coming out of a door. And I saved that image. I can show you that image actually. This is the altered image. So this image was not, this was in a movie and I screenshotted it.
Nice.
Yeah. It was coming out of a door here. But then I took this image and I put it in Photoshop and changed some things about it. Yeah. So it didn't look exactly like that. and so I saved that image, the original one, not that one. And then the next day, this guy on Instagram messages me and he said, you know what? You remind me of a young Pam Grier. And I said, really? And he said, and I never thought we looked alike. Yeah. And I was like, really? And he showed me a picture of her and it was that same picture. So then I was like, okay, let's come listen to that. So then I took that picture and then I started sketching her. I did a study of her. Where is that study? Let me get it. It's right here. I actually did two studies. And then as I started doing the studies of her, I felt like I was merging her with me. And I kind of realized that I do that a lot. Like when I paint the women, they're them, but they're also like me. It's almost like every woman that I do is like a self-portrait in a way. Anyway, so I started sketching her more and then I started noticing, you know, certain things on her body, because you know she was very like large chest, and you know me, I've always kind of been like skinny but like large chest. So I was just like, wow, but she like wore it with so much power. And sometimes like I've actually kind of tried to downplay that part of my body because of the negative attention that I sometimes get. And but then there's times where I'm just like embracing it and I'm like so happy and just comfortable with my body, you know. So I guess it gave me like, it inspired me, I guess. And then I started looking up all these images of her and I was like, wow, I guess I can see the, you know, thing. So from there, I realized like she was going to be one of my muses that I was going to use. And so I ended up putting her in that scene. And so it's like her, but it's also me at the same time. It's like a mix of us. And yeah, so that's how that one kind of came to be.
It's funny, and thank you, because I was meeting with a friend yesterday. And reason this is going to be very interesting, I think, because it's no coincidences. Talking with a friend, and she was like, yeah, keep getting, I look like Pam Grier.
Oh, wow.
Literally in the conversation. And, you know, we're chatting it up. She was a guest in the pod, and we were just, you know, kind of connecting. And she was like, you ever hear that you look like Donald Glover? And I was like, you're like the fifth person that's told me that. And it's this thing where, what is it? It's not a coincidence. And it's like, I like that dude. I like how he goes about his creativity and what he tries to bring all of these different things, sometimes going left, sometimes doing, you know, something that, okay, that makes sense. I don't know if you should be rapping, but that makes sense. And, you know, these sort of different things. So hearing like, you know, you got the sort of DM of like, you know, you look like Pam Grier, and having sort of this image and the blending that's happening there, where in the piece that you were showing me, where does the color come from? And as far as this is an image or an idea that was in a dream, are you like doing one of these? Like, yo, I got my notebook, I got to write this down.
Yeah, I have my dream journal, and I sketch in it probably on a daily or every other day basis. And I sketch and I write a lot in there. So sometimes I'll just write something like a green door, or, you know, floor with no ground. And then I'll, you know, sometimes poems will come to me in my dream, and sometimes just images. And with this kind of show that's been developing, it's been developing now for several months. And originally I was kind of inspired by my mom. And so I was going to do a show called Valerie, which is my mother's name. And I was taking pictures that she had gave me from the 70s when she was a teenager. And it kind of branched from there. It's like, I started listening to a lot of Minnie Riperton. Minnie Riperton, she kind of looks like my mom a lot. And my mom has breast cancer. Minnie Riperton passed from breast cancer. There was just these things that were kind of aligning. I was listening to the music. It's almost like she was foreshadowing her passing. And so it was very deep, but I was originally going to do like some kind of memorandum, like paintings, like in memorandum of her in a way. And then it just kind of developed into me looking at movies from the 70s, looking at music from the 70s. And then I started finding these other women, and then it kind of like just developed from there. But I was using those images as kind of like just indexing them. And then my dreams, I was having like these recurring dreams about different things. And then it was almost like things were just aligning with each other. I also watched a documentary on Danielle Luna. And are you familiar with her?
I am not. I'm typing the name in right now.
So when I used to model, people would always tell me like, you remind me of Danielle Luna. I'm 6'1" and Danielle Luna's like 6'2". And so she was really, really tall, skinny. And when I would model, like, I used to be really skinny like that back then, not anymore. And people would always be like, oh, you remind me of Danielle Luna. And I watched a documentary of her recently, and she actually, her real name was not Danielle Luna, but she named herself Luna because she would say she's from the moon. And so like the moon, the stars, thing like that. So I'm kind of pulled her into the narrative, because she also felt like she had that kind of je ne sais quoi, that mystique, that thing, that magic that like I feel like we hold. And I think that the show is also kind of about magic. There's going to be a man in the show. His name is Mr. Magic. So it's like different characters. I can kind of give you a little. So there's going to be two paintings of him. I'm doing a small one of him right now. So this one is going to be titled The Magician.
Nice.
Yeah. And then it's going to be a big painting of him, Mr. Magic.
I like these cool colors that are there too. It's just like, purple, you're getting the blue.
A little view of some stuff. And then there's one over here that I had to move because I had to make space. But you could probably recognize who these are.
Supremes?
Yes.
Nice.
Yeah. So yeah, it's developing, have some works on paper that I was playing with.
And I like that you're capturing the hair too. You know, that's one of those things. And that last one, it's like you're capturing the hair because like it's important. Like, you know, black women, the hair. It's like, look, you got the
And I'm kind of playing with it, and like some of the hair is blue. I'm just telling myself, like, you know, if I want to do something, just do it. If I want to paint the hair blue, it's blue now. If I want to, you know, like this is black, but it has a blueness to it, I guess, in a way. And then I was like, what if I make it more blue, a little bit more, you know, blue? And I feel like the contrast of the colors, these are works on paper. So these are paintings and drawn. They're like multi, I guess, mixed media. I was doing some wash paintings and then using color pencil on top. You know, this is like how the studies, so loose studies kind of start like this. And working towards it now, just started the sketch today. So today we're just doing the under sketch.
As you touched on, you're building out your universe. You're furthering your universe. So to your thing, look, the hair is going to be blue. This is just what it is. In this universe, hair is blue. I don't care, you know? Yeah. And I think, again, it's like the people that are supposed to get it, and I can say that I'm one of them, they're going to get it and they're going to be riding with it. So let me ask you these last two real questions. And then I got some rapid fire questions. So some people like to call them the BS questions. I like to say that they're fun. All right. So which part of your process, because, you know, this is like one of those rare instances where I've been able to see like works in production being developed. And it's like, in all the interviews I've done, it's the first time. So shout out to you. You're a first.
I'm giving you some exclusives.
I appreciate it. So which part of your process, like, takes, this is a multi-part question, which part of your process, like, takes the most time? Which part of the process is more like the most like play, and which is the most like work?
Wow, that's a good question.
I wrote that question today. That's a brand new question. I'm coming up with new stuff too.
What's the most like work and what's the most like playing? I would say there's aspects of each process that feel like work and feel like playing. For me, I would say my studies feel like playing. And that's why I love to do studies, because I feel like, well, that was not the fall. I feel like I can just play, you know? I can take the reference, whether it be like my dream sketch or like a photographic reference, and then I'm like inventing from it. And I'm just being loose. You know, I'm being loose, and I'm not like confining myself. I'm just like, you know what, let me explore. Because I think I have to constantly tell myself that I'm not creating reality. Mm. You know, I'm creating my own version of an idealized, imagined thing that has a thread of reality in it, but it's something new. And so when you're creating something new, you can't contain yourself in the old or what's existing. You're creating something that doesn't exist. So when I'm able to play with like my sketches, I'm just being free. I'm like, you know what? I want the neck to look like this. I want the shoulders to have this angle to them. I want the eyes to be overly expressive. I want there to be more lines in the face here. I'm just pulling something else from it. And then I'll go back and look at the original reference and I'm like, it doesn't look like the same thing anymore, you know? And I feel like that's the funnest part of it, where I'm just able to like play, I'm listening to my music, I'm just like losing myself in the work. And then I also think when I first start the painting, that's really exciting. Because, you know, there's like been so much writing, there's been so much, several studies that I've done, you know, like fleshed out drawings, you know, and then it's like, okay, I'm finally here to the painting, let's go, you know?
Yeah.
And then a part that feels like work is getting through the painting, getting through the painting, of course, you know, some of the writing, even though I really love writing. But yeah, like sometimes the painting, but I'm realizing if the painting is a hassle to get through, it's not where you need to be. Like, of course, there's going to be some parts that are just tedious, but the painting shouldn't really feel too much like that. You know, it should be really fun throughout most of it. And that's kind of where I'm at now. I don't want to paint anything that's not fun.
Yeah, I'm on that same tip. Like, you know, I've been telling more and more people, and you start responding in this way. I was like, look, I'm done with auditioning. I don't really do that anymore. And, you know, you're right. It's the going back to one of the things you mentioned, the, you know, just when you go into it, it's an energy thing. You go into it feeling like this is not fun. I'm not super interested in this. This is kind of mid. It's like, I can do it. I'm confident I can do it. Like, I love when I'm coming there, coming to an interview, I've booked an interview. And the thing for me, the process for me is once I get something from them, a bio or something, and if I'm really, really, really into their stuff, writing questions takes no time. Coming up with thoughtful, interesting questions takes no time. Trying to get into their head takes no time. But when it's somewhat of a slog and I'm trying to get through it, it's, I would imagine, very similar. It's like, damn, I got to write these? Damn. And, you know, it's like, hey, what's interesting about their work? And I talk to curators at times, and they'll ask me, because I'll do interviews with them and so on, just again, trying to get multiple perspectives. And, you know, they'll say, so how do you curate this? And I was like, I'm trying not to sound like a dick or anything, but does their work interest me? And that's sort of the starting point. And which degree it interests me. There are times where I can talk to a chef. I come up with questions immediately because I'm a food nerd. If I talk to someone that's in comics, I wanted to be a comic book artist. So I'm going to have that perspective. And then when it goes to visual artists and photographers and so on. So it's different things, but sometimes it might be someone who's a really good interview, perspectively for the clicks, if you will, but I might not personally be interested in their work to the degree in which maybe a listener could be interested in hearing their story. Cause you know, we're around for the, you know, especially with social media, and I know we're both kind of, you know, taking some time away from it or reanalyzing our relationship with it. There is an attention economy out there. And it's like, oh, Rob interviewed this big name person. But it's like, was the interview good? Was the interview interesting? I'd rather talk to people that it's like, oh, we clicked. And the thing that's funny about it, and it's almost deceptive, where folks will listen to an interview and they're like, damn, he really helped that person show that they're a real cool person. I think they're friends. It's like, I'm just meeting a person. I'm just meeting Lala. So here's the last sort of real question. What, and this kind of ties, I think, to it, in exploring like opportunities, right? Whether it be, hey, I'm going to work with this gallery, or this is, you know, something I'm going to lend my time to, like even doing a podcast. What are, for you, and maybe this is something that could be, you know, advice oriented for younger artists or artists who are just trying to figure out, what are the green flags for you? What are the red flags for you?
Oh, wow. This is actually, I was going to branch into this. So you're right on, right here. I think that they have definitely changed for me recently. I started showing while I was in school, like 2018, but at that time I was really showing in like a smaller capacity. It was like more in artist run spaces. So I would say when I really like launched into like real commercial notable galleries, that was in 2020. And I think I was just happy to be there in a way. Like I was saying yes to a lot. I was saying no a lot even back then, but I was taking on too much. And I learned so much in that process of what is acceptable and what's not acceptable. And I think for me now, I'm just in a different space than I guess a lot of upcoming artists. So I can't really, I'll branch into advice for them. But for me, I feel like now I don't want to do anything that doesn't make sense for me.
I agree.
You know, it has to make sense. Like, it has to make sense if, you know, because there was a point where I was like, oh, I haven't showed in Berlin. Oh, yes, I'm in Berlin. Oh, I haven't showed in London. Oh, yes, now I'm in London. I'm in Paris. Now I'm in Rome. Now I'm in this. Now I'm in that. Like, it was like I wanted to hit every mark. And I basically have done that. There's probably some other places, like I haven't shown in Seoul or something. But, you know, I've shown like all over the world. And I think now it's like, okay, you've done that, but is this going to make sense for you? You know, and so I'm very careful and strategic, and it's really a good place to be in, but it doesn't feel good sometimes because I'm constantly saying no, you know, and sometimes I'm like, damn, maybe that would have been okay opportunity. You know, I said no to some really good opportunities sometimes, then later I'm like, oh, I could have met Beyonce. I didn't know.
Yeah, it's important to be able to be strategic. You know, like when you said that, I was like, oh, this sister is on the same page. She is on the same page I'm on when it comes to that. And now, my friend, you've given yourself like 4 rapid fire questions.
Okay.
Like I said, I've been adding as we've been talking. I've been typing as we've been talking. So the way I like to describe these, and, you know, I inevitably will, you know, we all just overthink them, but you don't want to overthink these questions. It's just like, look, I said what I said. This is my answer. All right. Here's the first one. Obviously music, you're a singer, you have music in the studio. What is currently getting the most play on your playlist?
Artist or song?
Song. Let's go with song.
Oh, do I have Spotify? Spotify tells me, but I have Apple Music. I don't know if they tell me.
Or tell me the artist if you like. That's fine as well.
So the artist that I play the most probably is Minnie Riperton, and I love her. I've been living in the 70s, y'all. So yeah, Minnie Riperton, I've been playing her like nonstop. I probably play her every day. And I've been playing a lot of Stevie Wonder. And then I kind of been playing some rap again lately, which is kind of surprising because I kind of took a break from rap for a little bit. But like, I was listening to a lot of Foxy Brown, China Doll, that album. What else? I'm listening to some classical music. And a lot of these like LA, so there's like a whole movement of like LA bands that sound like they're from the 60s.
Okay, I like this.
You know that song, Can I Call You Rose?
Yes.
Yeah, so I played that song, and then I basically found that there's all these like new age 60s crooners yeah. from LA, and I've been listening to a lot of them.
Yeah, they're jamming on The Sacred Souls. I dig it, I dig it. Oh yeah. But yeah, because I think a lot of times we are our influences, because that's, you know, sort of our reference point sometimes. It's not like that we're stealing from them, but we're being actually influenced by them. Like, you know, I dive at some of these old books, like the Austin Kleon books, or even this one that some of my questions have been coming out of, the Adam Kurtz's book, Things Are What You Make Them, Life Advice for Artists. And you know, I'm like getting that sort of inspiration from the questions and how he's covering things. And inevitably, they show up in the questions and how I'm approaching conversations with folks. So, you know, and I don't shy away from that, you know?
Yeah. So I think, so you asked me which media has influenced me the most when it comes to art?
Yeah. Or like really captures like, yeah, they're saying exactly what I'm on.
Like, ooh, I wouldn't say I found that yet, to be honest, but I would say one of the documentaries that really made me think a lot about color is The History of Art in 3 Colors. It's a documentary that was on the BBC, and there was like one of the chapters, it was talking about blue and the history of blue, and it really made me think about this, I watched this years ago, but it really made me think about color and the symbology of color and being like very intentional about color, because I think before that I was in school and it was more aesthetics to me. It was like, okay, I like this color, or I like, you know, but why do you like it? What does it mean? Or why are we drawn to certain colors? Why are we inspired by certain things? And now I'm very methodical in my approach with color. It's very strategic. Yeah. Whereas before it was just more about the aesthetics.
Blue for a long time was my favorite color, and I was wondering why I was so attracted to it. And it's my favorite colors become sort of these, it's really mid-tones, but if I were to put really fine point on it, it's probably a gray, because I'm just kind of sitting in the center or what have you. It's like I can see each perspective, and I think that's an interesting vantage point. Not a fence sitter per se, but I think it's an interesting vantage point to observe from. So earlier you showed me the glorious lemon tree. You're dressed currently like a lemon. For those folks that don't know, yeah, you're dressed like a lemon right now.
Yeah, lemon. I don't know if you can see lemons on my dress.
What is your favorite meal? If it's lemon related, extra points. You know, like, yo, look, I love lemon chicken. Love that lemon piccata. But what is your favorite dish?
But I would say probably, it would probably be something seafood oriented. Okay. Yeah.
All right, this is the last one. This is the bring it home one. So I'm very curious about like the processes that creative folks engage in, like in their downtime. Right. So this is the way this one goes. What is the first thing that you're doing once you get up in the morning? Like some folks are like, yo, the day doesn't start until I have my coffee. I do stretch, I do my mindfulness practice. What is the first thing that's integral for you to get started in the day?
Usually when I wake up, I've been telling myself to not get on my phone immediately. And I sit in the bed for 30 minutes to an hour and talk to myself or talk to God. I don't know, I talk about a lot of things that are on my mind. And I guess kind of like meditate. It's more like meditation. So yeah, that's probably what I do. I don't drink coffee. I used to drink coffee in high school when I worked at McDonald's, but I guess it didn't work because I'm still tall. I didn't want to like prevent my height. I actually wanted to be tall when I was in, I wanted to be as tall as possible because I was trying to model. In my mind, I thought I was going to be like a supermodel. And I was like, I need to be taller. But I just loved coffee. And but now I just don't drink it because I think I'm so naturally like bubbly and energetic that coffee just, it gives me a little too much energy. So yeah, but I do like tea. I'm doing this whole thing with like intermittent fasting.
Yeah.
So I don't eat until probably like 3 p.m. I know it's sometimes a little extreme, but yeah, so I just don't eat anything. So I'm just kind of chilling for some hours, doing like no food, just do my lemon water in the morning. I don't do it every day. I do it like every other day. And I'll have some tea. And then 2 o'clock hits, I'm like, okay, I'm getting a little hungry. I start getting ready to cook and then I eat. And then I go down and I took like a 2-3 week break from the studio. So I was more so trying to catch up on my rest. I don't know if it really helped, but now I'm back in the studio and yeah, I usually would come down in the studio. I live right upstairs from my studio. So I just roll out of bed and come right downstairs. And I'll usually work for like a few hours. The first few hours will be more so sketching, studies, playing around. And then I'll eat a little snack. And then I'll get like real, like go heavy with it and basically start painting. And then I have dinner and then my day's over.
So, all right. So that's kind of it on the rapid fire. And thank you so much. This has been truly a joy and a treat. And so there are two things I want to do to close out. One, I want to thank you again for coming on. And two, I want to invite and encourage you to share with the listeners where they can check you out, your work, website, social media, shameless plugs. The floor is yours.
Yeah, so my website is lonnietower.com. It's under maintenance right now. We're doing some adjustments. And, but it should be back up in the next week or two. And Yeah, Instagram, Lanice Howard, Lanice underscore Howard underscore studio. Also, you can find my bio and kind of about my work at MindySolomon.com/Lanice Howard. Also, Monty.com/Lanice Howard. Also, so yeah.
And there you have it, folks. I want to again thank Lanice Howard for coming on and sharing a bit of her story, a bit of her process, and giving us, you know, a little taste of some future work. And I'm Rob Lee, saying that there's art, culture, and community in and around your neck of the woods. You've just got to look for it.